SpaceX, maybe with a $60 billion valuation acquisition of Cursor, right on the verge of an IPO themselves. Tim Cook out at Apple as CEO, and OpenAI, tons of launches. Brett, let's start with the Cursor potential acquisition from SpaceX. Why? And does it make sense at a $60 billion valuation?
So Cursor is a company that provides basically a front-end developing interface that then uses underlying models to help coders code. And it's growing, you know, from $1 billion to $2 billion. It's doubling year over year at $1 billion in revenue, which seems like, hey, that's quite a good business to be in. And the company is in trouble because the underlying model companies, OpenAI and Anthropic, are trying to develop the same application and see it as strategic to provide that to their own customers. So Cursor is growing very well, but it is, you know, at risk to its suppliers. In the meantime, SpaceX XAI has also had its access to Claude Code cut off, or at least they've said that Claude Code cut them off because they're competitive with Claude Code. I'm sure Anthropic had a reason why, but really it's because it's a competitor. And so XAI also needs access both to better coding models and also needs access to developers who are developing against a front-end interface. So these two aligning, it gets the Cursor team access to a lot more compute and a underlying kind of model developer who's not going to cut them off. And it gets XAI access to better coding tooling and distribution to coders on the front end. So that's the reasoning behind the acquisition. $60 billion sounds like a lot. On the other hand, you're buying something that is doing $2 billion in revenue and has doubled year over year. So it's, and relative to the prospective value of SpaceX XAI, it is a small percentage of, you know, their equity. So to me, it seems like it makes sense for both parties, and I can understand why it happened.
And so maybe we can just break down the layers of the stack here, right? You've got the compute layer, you've got the model builders. Is there anything, you've got the Cursor level, which is like the interface, and then you've got the applications on top. Is that the stack,
so,
or what's the right?
Jensen describes it as a five-layer cake, and I think there's some utility in that, where you have the apps, the models, let's see if I get them all, the compute infrastructure, the chips, and energy. And you can be held back by any layer of the stack. They all need to move forward simultaneously. The AI model companies like OpenAI and Anthropic have been developing the models, and they've moved into the application layer in some key categories. So Claude Code and Claude Cowork and OpenAI Codex all provide kind of a coding application that sits on top of their underlying models. They've also, to various degrees, signed partnerships, or sometimes in OpenAI's case, tried to own the kind of compute infrastructure layer of the stack. And, you know, increasingly are trying to vertically integrate into the chip side. So XAI, SpaceX also, you know, they can motivate in energy resources probably better than any of these companies. You know, they've demonstrated that with the data centers they've built in Tennessee, or the data center they built in Tennessee, bringing in their own, you know, gas turbines to power this thing up. They have ambitions to vertically integrate at the chip level. They have underlying models. They don't have a very strong application layer on top of it. And so Cursor can fill in that part of their five-layer cake.
Why do you think everyone is so focused on coding?
Because it's where it is working best. In terms of,
it's not just it's where it's working best, as in it's very high value and it's a portion of the labor value chain where we were previously talent constrained, and so you can unlock a lot inside an organization. But having a good coding system then allows you to work, you know, and dig into everything that's happening in the computer. And so not only does it provide someone who's a coder with help, but it also provides, it's a tool that's like a general purpose tool to like doing automated knowledge work. And I don't think that they knew that Anthropic took Claude Code and almost discovered, hey, we can enable this capability that we have here to create Claude Cowork. And so it was not going at coding because we think we're going to open up this other opportunity. It was going at coding because that was clearly an area where these models were very useful. There's lots of great underlying data. You can you can have like a really a self-training loop where it knows whether or not the code compiles. It can read the output. So it's a very rich area to also train the models. And then that unlocked a lot of other capabilities. And so I think it's not, they didn't, maybe they kind of intuited that, but I don't think anybody set out and said, we're going to go at coding first because that's going to unlock general purpose knowledge work capability. It's more like feeling their way there because that's what the market demanded and that's what they're getting good yield on. Mm-hmm.
Is there precedent for a merger acquisition to go through or be a part of what could potentially is likely happening right now, which is an IPO roadshow for SpaceX? Like the timing is quite incredible. And I think it was Frank at ARK that said, if you look at what SpaceX has done over the last 12 months, if you assume they go through with the Cursor acquisition at $60 billion, they also acquired XAI, which houses X as well, for $250 billion. So that's $310 billion of acquisition in 12 months just to get to potentially the frontier of AI, agentic coding. Like it seems like a big bet relative to everything else going on. And from a rocket company.
Well, I think they are already going to place a big bet on AI, and that's why they're IPOing. They already, yeah. The amount of upmass that's required for AI is, you know, 10x or 20x what they otherwise were going to be able to justify launching, except to go to Mars or the moon, but in terms of cash flow generated upmass. And recognizing that, hey, there's an opportunity to throw a lot of capital at this, would you rather, you know, get a, you know, maybe it's a 4-year payback period on your satellites or a like 6 months to 12 month payback period by taking on the AI, by not just living at the infrastructure layer, but providing the model and taking on that application layer, there's the potential to have much higher returns on assets, yeah. Which then accelerates the cash flow cycle.
But you like as Elon, as the CEO of SpaceX, you have to really believe that these acquisitions will pay off.
Not
because
the,
right now, he's not this. Oh, he's what? He's not.
No, Gwynn. Isn't Gwynn Shotwell?
I thought she was
the
president. But either way, you German. Have to really believe because Cursor's doing $2 billion in run rate. XAIX is estimated at around $5 billion total. So you acquired $7 billion in revenue or run rate for $310 billion. Like that's an eye-watering amount for very little revenue. So you really have to believe on the back end you can make up significant ground.
And Nick, you're right.
Yeah, and like he's, I said, I think it...
She's president. She's president.
Yeah. Come on, Sam.
Yeah. Come on,
Sam. Of course he's CEO.
Like I said, it's really a function of per gigawatt you have in space, are you generating $12 billion in revenue or are you generating like $30 billion in revenue? And so it's kind of what is the return on kind of the launch vehicle look like? It's very sensitive to that variable. There's no guarantee that they succeed. As in right now, like you're saying, the evidence is not that Grok is going to monetize the same way that Anthropic and OpenAI have monetized. He's trying to like set up the architecture in place to catch up at the application yeah. layer. So right now, I think it's fair to say they've, in a short time, XAI has almost caught up at the model layer. They clearly are on a trajectory to winning at the compute infrastructure layer combined with energy, because like by going into space, energy is no longer the constraint. And they have to, and this is clearly part of what he's trying to put together with the Cursor acquisition, have to win at the application layer for all of that to actually, you know, make sense. But I don't think he looks at it as like, this is what I'm getting on a multiple of revenue. He's looking at what's my return on capital in, you know, 5 years forward.
Well, I was also thinking about this. I don't think people appreciate what it means to be compute constrained. And right, so it's like, we say it often, the world is compute constrained, which is true, but am I compute constrained? No. Are you compute constrained? No. It's like, are the model builders compute constrained? Yes. But it's like, it trickles through to the consumer in like a loose way. People, you know, you hear rumblings about it online of people saying, hey, Anthropic downgraded me from, you know, 4.7 to 4.6 to 4.5. I think in 2 years, there's like a much more acute pain of what it means to be compute constrained. And that is a very different landscape than what we're in today. Do you agree or disagree there, Brett?
Yeah, I think that the reason you're not compute constrained is because you're not yet figuring out how to use these tools to their full potential. You could be, but you're not. It's your weakness.
Well, I disagree. It's like right now everyone's going, and it's like, yes, it's like you can build. We're still in like the early part of the curve where,
yes,
you know, you can train the next model on what you can build. But if at a certain point in 2 years' time, the infrastructure build out is going to be slower than what you need to keep pace with the model build out.
Yeah, I like Brett's
and take. It could manifest in compute constraints can manifest in different vectors. It's like, why isn't this model running more quickly for me if I'm somebody that's just directly interacting with it? That's also a function of how much compute you've thrown at compressing the model. You know, why is my agent so expensive when it's running continuously? It's because of the balance between how much they've thrown at training to make the agent capable and inexpensive versus how much they're devoting to inference to like allow the agent to run. And then how come I've run out of tokens? Like, why are my, you know, agents not even able to operate? That's like another manifestation of compute constraint. So we believe that the compute thrown at training is going to make these things more capable. And so then they'll be more broadly useful. So then people will want to use them more. And so then that compute constraint will become more and more of a pinch point for enterprises across the space. I think that's accurate. And you can see the beginnings of it now. But actually, what you're saying, Sam, which I agree with, is it'll be really widespread, as in kind of like an organization's access to tokens is going to be a key differentiator in its ability to perform.
And right now it's like you can mask it because things take time. And so everyone's somewhat on, no matter how good or bad you are, the race just started. So everyone looks close. But if you go out, you know, 2 years, then you get a dispersion in terms of the decisions people are making today.
Yeah. But I like Brett's take, which is if you're not being rate limited by Claude or ChatGPT, you're just not good at using AI. You're just not doing it right.
but one of the ways these things are developing is it's like being able to use AI well is also itself getting much easier. As in OpenAI announced, you know, last week, these agents. So what are these agents going to be? They're kind of like these automated processes you can get running, and they can be more capable. They really can offload stuff from you. But then that, you know, consumes tokens as well. And it's great ROI. And, you know, at some point, suddenly, like, either you're asking for more budget or they're so compute constrained that they're raising pricing unless they can build out the infrastructure. And like you're saying, Sam, I think that there's going to be a natural kind of share allocation across the companies based on the amount of underlying compute infrastructure they have access to. And that's the at least medium term likely game. And I think Anthropic, which underinvested in future compute and has signed a bunch of business, is now probably going to be at risk of churning that business, given they don't have the same compute resources set up relative to at least OpenAI. And then SpaceX is, within that context, these acquisitions for SpaceX make sense because they're just like putting together the team to take advantage of the, call it medium long term, almost inevitable compute advantage they'll have to then transform that into like huge cash flow generation.
All right, Nick, Tim Cook, your man, your guy, out as CEO. What does this mean for your belief in Apple?
I believe Apple's finally about to start cooking with AI.
Don't you think this is more of like a sign that Apple is going to stay the course that they're on right now? That's how I read it.
So background here, Tim Cook out as CEO of Apple. John Ternus is going to take over. Tim Cook will go into the chairman of the board position. John Ternus, who has been with Apple for 25 years, was previously, before this promotion, was sitting as SVP of hardware engineering, will now take over effective September 1st. And I think, yes, you could argue that, you know, he is one of the lifers at Apple, is used to doing it the Apple way. And maybe he, you know, continues on the Tim Cook path. But I think you're seeing something where the company clearly knows it needs to change. Tim Cook probably feels comfortable handing over the ship now. And I think if you are John Ternus stepping into this role, you have one job, and that's to just deeply integrate AI into all of the hardware that you've been building over the past 25 years for this company. And that's it.
Well, what about,
and that's, you
what
sh-
about
should
the
be
MacBook,
your sole focus as CEO.
It's like, what about the MacBook Neo, though? It's like, this is an example of, hey, we actually don't need to do that. Look, we can. There's a huge market here of us continuing on our existing course and still doing extremely well.
Well, I mean, I think you continue to deliver compelling hardware experiences that look more traditional. But I think if you're as the, you know, hardware guy at Apple for the last 25 years, you are probably extremely excited about being able to integrate AI into new hardware devices, right? Like, you're building off of the greatest operating system and hardware platform in the world. And now you get to go around the country and the world and say, hey, you're a great AI engineer. Come work with us at Apple and deeply integrate agents into everything the consumer does. And you have a billion person install base that you can leverage to be able to deploy products to. And I think it's a, like, one of the easiest, like, CEO positions you could possibly get right now, because it's so obvious and the playbook don't blow it, because it's pretty easy, because the playbook
take it. Yes. The set of moves they should make are easy, but they're not setting themselves up to make those moves, I think, would be the concern. I agree with you. The mandate should be, how do we take AI and deeply integrate it into all of our hardware? The problem is, they don't own or control the performant AI sufficient to deeply integrate it. And they've underinvested, I would argue, in a catastrophic way in developing or acquiring the AI talent. And think of it this way, Microsoft, which had a very close relationship to OpenAI, which is
still couldn't do it,
couldn't successfully deeply integrate AI into its set of software applications that it had full control over, had full visibility into the AI model, and it's still struggling at doing so. And it's getting basically taken to lunch by, or, you know, taken to lunch? What's the phrase? Anyway, it's getting, like, played out of the gym by OpenAI and Anthropic, operating on its own, like, product suite, basically.
Yeah.
So then that, I think that challenge is, as hard as it is in software, it's probably 10 times harder or 100 times harder in hardware to do it in a really compelling, slick way. And the good thing for Apple is nobody has done it. There is no, you know, Nick is not wearing an AI pendant right now. We know, you know, members of the team have Meta's glasses, but they usually just don't use them. So I think that it's not as if anybody's cracked the code. And so you could argue that, well, maybe Apple, you know, puts together a constellation of devices where this really works. But at least in software land, it seems the lesson is that you have to be controlling the underlying models, because you're really going to need to compress them in a really intelligent way against the endpoint device for this all to work. And
well, let me offer.
Wait, before it's like I would say the hardware element gives them more leverage and potential than Microsoft, in that it's like the fact that AirPods are so widespread and still used today is crazy in a sense, because in theory there should be other options that are better and whatever. It's like AirPods is a perfect example. Even if they have to use an open source model to do whatever, I think AirPods is a huge avenue where they've yet to really explore. Plus, I do think that Constellation, it's like having the phone in your pocket is extremely high value, especially when everyone's willing to spend $1,500 to upgrade it every 2 to 3 years. It's like, it's very hard for someone else to come in the hardware space and displace Apple as that high value, you know, AI player.
Yeah, Sam, let me build off what you're saying here, because I agree. I think Apple is in a unique position because of the hardware footprint they have. The reason no company has yet to crack the consumer from an AI perspective is because in order to crack the consumer and really deliver a compelling agentic experience, I think it involves handing over a level of trust to your agent that no startup today has with the consumer. Apple has it. Alphabet has it. There's maybe a handful of other companies in the world that have that level of trust with the consumer. And so Apple, all they need to do is to deliver a pretty simplistic agentic experience across iOS. And that involves just gathering context, right? Being able to have some contextual awareness.
Don't you think if that were the case, wouldn't Google's like Pixel phone already be kind of interesting and dominant? As in, Google, like if I'm imagining, you know, there's some set of marginal customers they're competing for their hardware franchise that is just weighing off Apple versus Google. Would you wager that Apple's AI experience is as compelling as Google's integrated with its hardware a year from now or 2 years
from
now?
But I'll tell you
how far behind you think Apple will be relative to Google. Like experience is available now with Google. How many years until I get that same kind of AI integrated experience on Apple's devices?
Well, let me explain it. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter, because think about how long Pixel phones and Samsung phones have had better features from a camera's perspective, which is one of the biggest use cases of owning a phone in general. They've been
within the context of somebody's life. Think about how.
Yes, but you have like
more megapixels on a camera does not really materially change the experience.
But you have to. But it does for some people. And what I'm saying is you have to be materially better.
Let's just look at enterprise space again for a second. I think a lot of people's ways in which they work, at least on the AI adopter side, people who are trying these tools, suddenly the entire way in which their work life is organized has transformed over, call it, 3 months. Okay. So I think that's a strong sign that exposed to these tools, you can totally transform the experience, where it's not like, oh, look, I have like 6 more megapixels, so then therefore I can blow up this photo to like a, you know, wall-sized kind of print rather than being restricted to like half a wall-sized, to holy moly, this really just makes my life a lot easier. And I'm looking at that schmo over there who has an iPhone, who is still like kind of like bumping around with it and not getting anything done. And I'm laughing at him. So it does seem likely that at some point on the consumer side, there will be a similar threshold crossing event. And in enterprise space, like Claude in particular, where like enterprises are actually loath to take on new software, they don't want to go away from Microsoft, right? Because Microsoft is already qualified in. They already know how it uses all the data. Like, they really don't want to shift platforms, but they have wholesale dumped tens of billions of dollars into, Anthropic's products because they cross that point. Don't you think that there's somewhere looming out there, admittedly, we have not crossed it, but somewhere looming out there, just a similar threshold type event in the consumer space?
Yes.
And that if Apple does not have kind of like the product to deliver at that point, they suddenly are in huge trouble where just like enterprises went from we're spending $1 billion 2 years ago, now we're spending $40 billion annualized-ish. Maybe it was $1 billion 3 years ago. Consumers will be like, I am happily renewing my iPhone this year because that's what I do and it has the best camera, to suddenly like, oh, I actually have to make a decision here because it's really inconvenient for me to stay on this platform despite all of the ways they've hooked me in. And so I need to figure out a way to begin to extract myself one device at a time because my friend over there is having a great time with his technology, whereas mine is like...
I would argue that the AirPods are the... I think...
Sam, you're so fixated on these AirPods.
It's like, no, Brett's saying it's like, what's the avenue? If someone comes out with a phone, it's no one's, you're not taking a risk with your phone. You don't want to say, okay, this is the first device. The AirPods / earphones are a peripheral device that in theory, people should be willing to take a bigger risk ongoing. It's like the odds of me switching out an iPhone next year, very low. The odds if someone came out with like a great, you know, AirPod-esque thing that collected context and all of this and was $400, much higher. That's why I'm saying it's like the angle at which someone comes in would be that. And the fact that we haven't seen anyone do it or really going for it gives me confidence that Apple has not lost this.
But the technology is just not there yet. As in kind of like the pendants that have tried to launch have been, you know,
The technology is there, Brett. It's just the use case is not there to make it like a compelling reason to be wearing these, you know,
The use case depends upon the technological capability, as in, I think that there's
I think the technology is there, like from what models are capable of. I just don't think anyone's packaged it in the right way to deliver it to a consumer-facing product that I'm deeply using on a daily basis.
There is a threshold at which the technology becomes very, very compelling and useful for people. And yes, maybe setting up a clawbot on your own to do things for you, if you're an early adopter, is that threshold. My view is it's actually still not quite there in terms of the total productivity delivered to the consumer space per cost. It's too expensive still. So the technology being there can be, well, yeah, it's capable if you want to spend $400 a month having agents run around and, you know, kind of chaotically try to do things for you. But a consumer is not going to pay $400 a month for kind of like that level of service. Now, at, you know, some threshold level, they will. And probably packaged into hardware, they'll be happy to do that. And with all those preconditions in place, I just don't trust that Apple is going to be first, second, third, or fourth to market with that service in a compelling way. I don't think.
Okay, so then on this note.
And the new CEO is not someone where I'm like, oh, that's the guy that's going to do it. This guy who is in charge of basically hardware and ops for them. You know, he's not, it's not like we are going to like drive towards this spot where the market is going. It's like, okay, keep managing the portfolio here. Let's not take any big swings. We'll just bide our time.
All right. I think Apple's going to surprise you. And I think if there's one company out there that you could point to and say, I'd be worried if they figured out what you've been describing, which is like the consumer inflection point. Like if someone delivered this product, if Alphabet did it, that's where I would start to be concerned for Apple.
Yeah, but when has Alphabet ever
fast follow and it will be fine? And they're going to be in co-opetition and, you know, Alphabet is incentivized to keep Apple around and not have an OpenAI or someone else come in.
No, like, no, but
it is a duopoly, and you kind of just respect that it is, and there's nothing that the government can seem to be able to do to dismantle it.
I would say almost the opposite. It's like, when was the last time Alphabet, despite, and again, I'm bullish, I think Alphabet's doing a ton of good things. When was the last time they had a great product for a consumer ever? It's like, that's not their DNA either. If they acquired someone, I'd be like, okay, well, that's dead. It's like, that gives Apple more time.
Well, I think, yeah, but the consumer realm doesn't change that often. Like, once something is in place, like, what has been the greatest consumer company to happen in the last decade? TikTok? Like, that's probably, like, the biggest disruption in consumer landscape in the last decade was TikTok. And that was just a distribution chain that was actually embedding AI into the distribution of content. And so, like, but everything has largely been the same for the past like 2+ decades. Phones have been getting, you know, thinner and lighter and sometimes bigger
and heavier,
but it's like the same, you're delivering the same exact experience. So it's like, I think
fundamental, like the technological capability, like as an Apple came to market with multi-touch, and then they basically held a 1 to 2 year lead on the field for a number of years. The field basically caught up to them, but they had enough kind of locked in platform advantages with developers and apps and kind of good high end kind of marketing and product taste that they retained that spot. I think there's plenty of evidence that kind of their ability to select and curate consumer experiences is degraded. Two, they've clearly poisoned their relationship with the developer community to an increasing degree, with kind of like a heavy-handed app store where they're trying to extract too much of the economics because they need to continue to tell a growth story to Wall Street. That just creates space. Now, is somebody going to jump in to fill that space? I think that there is. It's definitely true that for this consumer, I'm like, I gotta like reduce my dependency on Apple, just because it's like second and third in class services in a number of areas. And now it's possible that I could migrate. Whereas before it was impossible. Like, as in, how would you systematically take all of your photos out of Apple Photos, including the live photo feature, which is an attached video file that's attached to those photos? 2 years ago, impossible. Now, I bet you could vibe code an app that would do it for you, you know? And and then somebody will package that. As in, imagine that you are launching a competing hardware service as some compelling proposition, and you package it with an agent that's like, we're going to port your whole life over and get it out. Calendaring, too. Like, Apple Calendars, I'm now off. I was on it forever because it was well integrated into the devices, but it, like, you know, they don't have connectors to AI stuff. And so then it means that you're cut off from actually using the useful AI tools that exist today if you're within Apple's ecosystem without doing some kind of bulky implementation. So now the family calendar is on Google Calendar. Now, like, I went to Google, but I think that that's kind of at the edges, things are eroding, and there's the, you know, there could be like a proton torpedo headed straight to their exhaust port, and we're just going to like wake up one day to a product launch and be like, oh man, this is, you know, am I going to buy this next year's iPhone when it's so much better over on the other side of the wall?
Okay, on that note, let's keep this conversation moving. Qualcomm, OpenAI, hey, maybe there's a phone coming out.
Yeah, that's your 2028. Like,
are you gonna buy the OpenAI phone? And then, Brett, maybe you tee up into this as well. As last week, OpenAI said, "Hey, we're still here. We're putting out frontier models."
Sure. OpenAI released GPT 5.5 as well as a best-in-class image generation engine and AI agents and some other trinkets for people. They improve codecs so it can work with, it's more, call it Claude Cowork competitive. And I think that there is a degree to which people are throwing money at compute and they're just producing products that are improved relative to where they were before. And OpenAI, relative to Anthropic, is actually throwing a lot more gigawatts at training. So I think you should all else equal, it would not be out of bounds to see OpenAI product capability accelerate here. GPT 5.5, relative to the Mythos release that Claude released, looks like on a per cost basis, it's actually quite performant and compelling. And cost here is not just the cost per token, but also the speed with which it can deliver token. So they have done a lot of cooking behind the scenes, I think, to deliver that model. They do have a partnership with Joni Ivey and his startup that they acquired in that is supposed to release, some kind of consumer-facing hardware. I don't know if it's going to be a phone. In fact, I'd be surprised if it's directly a phone. But I think any of these devices probably needs to have connectivity, including cellular connectivity, embedded. In part, if you're going to run AI agents off the device, you want to be able to kind of like even, flex into the cloud and mask where you're coming from potentially. There's various reasons you might strategically want that. But that's net. I think that OpenAI is now probably best in class in terms of a enterprise and consumer facing both model and application. But I suspect that Anthropic will continue to, knock the doors off in terms of sales into enterprise with Cowork.
The Qualcomm news is specific to a phone. There are other rumors that they're building Sam's beloved AirPod competitor, but there are like the news that came out today is that they're working with Qualcomm to set up the supply chain to be able to deliver an agentic phone experience by 2028.
But
which I think is the right move.
Phone, how often
you need a phone?
How often do you use your phone to talk on the phone? This is my thing. Like phone
no, you
is
need
the wrong
the
way.
The phone is
the
for entertainment
for
purposes. See, this is where I think
that's
a lot
not a phone.
Of people.
Like yes. You have redefined you millennials have redefined what a phone is. A phone is a thing that has.
I make phone calls every day.
Sorry, the smartphone redefined what a phone is. It is a communication device, whether you want to send a phone call or send text messages, but it's primarily an entertainment device, which AI, as it in its current state, really doesn't disrupt anything that Meta or any of these other entertainment companies are doing. From a creation standpoint, it makes it much more entertaining, but it doesn't disrupt the way that you entertain yourself.
100%, which is why I don't think – I think there is this question of can you carve out the entertainment piece from the something else that you do.
Right.
Because you do, phones are primarily now the screen to watch TikTok videos and melt your brain.
Right.
And so there the marginal opportunity for an AI company going into what apparently we are insisting on calling a phone, even though it's not, is to say there's the entertainment device and then there's something else that's like the manage your life device. I think
you don't
that's
think they
what,
inherently have to be the same thing.
It's crazy to think that you would carry
have the smart TV like kind of manage your life implementations, including your smart household, worked at all?
Mine does.
Wait, but how's that relate? It's like if you have a device with a screen in your pocket, you don't want a second device with a screen in your pocket.
There's no need.
It's like there's
who says they have to have a screen?
Yeah, but okay. I'm gonna have this in my pocket, and then I'm also gonna have.
The entertainment being provided by these devices that are entertainment devices is really corrosive to humanity.
This is a very boomer take of you, Brett. You're really dating yourself. Not that I totally don't disagree, but let's just not go there. Let's just assume that it's a given. We're going to continue to rot our brains. If you assume that that is a constant, then you have to imagine that if you are an AI company, you are going to want to deliver that same entertainment experience. You don't need to recreate the wheel. You still just allow for Meta to use its to deliver its properties there, TikTok, everything. And then you just, on top of it, deliver an agentic workflow for the consumer. Sure. But that's why when you look at the space, you go, that's so easy for Apple to do. That's so easy for Alphabet to do across Android because the install base is already
easy,
there.
They would have already done it.
They don't need to do it yet is the point. They don't need to because to your point, the technology is not ready.
They can occupy this little,
it's
small
too
sliver
expensive.
Of the enterprise value landscape.
Hey, that they one at a time. By. One at a time.
Yeah, we're gonna get yelled at in the comments again, Brett. But I think it's you don't really need to go out there and start burning billions of dollars delivering these experiences to consumers yet. I actually think Apple hasn't lost a step waiting this much. I mean, you can say that they should have owned some of the, you know, revenue that OpenAI and Claude, but not really. Like, that's not really been their market to begin with.
Well, they're just at a very high level. They are definitely going from generating $20 billion per year or so in being the providing Google default search to paying Google some billions per year for their AI. So that's a net.
I think they still get the 20 billion and then they just give 1 billion back. So they're still up 19 on the whole deal.
No, except that AI, like search is not going to be the lucrative honeypot that it was before. It's all going to move through AI. So there, you know, I know it's so large a company that throwing away $20 billion a year is like, who cares? But I do think it's a sign of the direction of things to come. So,
all right. And this has been a lovely conversation and we're going to wrap it here. You know, today I think is the start of the OpenAI versus Elon trial. So maybe we'll talk about that next week. And yeah, we look forward to ask questions and we'll answer some of them next week.
ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public are separate unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to any company marketing or selling the products or services of the others. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public make no representation or warranties regarding and expressly disclaim any responsibility or liability for any acts, omissions, losses, or damages of the other entities or their affiliates, officers, employees, or agents. No company shall be liable for any indirect, incidental, consequential, or special damages arising out of or in connection with this podcast or its contents. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK, and investors should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statement. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.